Time for more of the Bob Woodson Show, What Works and Why, on TalkZone.com.
We're talking about youth violence, and our guest for this segment is John Chisholm, District Attorney for the City of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Mr. Chisholm is a native of Milwaukee who's received his law degree from the University of Wisconsin. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us, Mr. Chisholm, on the subject of youth violence.
Bob, it's a privilege. I'm glad to be able to do so.
Good. As a district attorney, you see a lot of problems with violence sort of close up and personal. As a prosecutor, how serious is the problem of youth violence in Milwaukee over the past few years?
Oh, it's the number one issue. It is the number one issue. When you consider both the impact of particularly gun violence and person-to-person violence on the individuals themselves and on their families and on the perception that people have of how safe their community is, it is the number one issue, and I've made it my number one priority. And what I came to quickly realize is that it was going to take a true community-wide effort focused on those most valuable resources, which are our schools, to really have an impact. And I can explain how I came down on that, but it is the single most important issue that confronts any major city in the United States is how do you control rising violence and particularly youth-related violence.
And I know that you have been a leader in seeking non-law enforcement remedies for this problem. I'm familiar with your restorative justice project and other things. Tell us something about the other things that you're doing that are seeking to provide an alternative to prosecution and incarceration of youth.
No question, Bob. I started off as the classic line prosecutor. I did felony drug and felony violent crime prosecutions and started up a program under Operation Ceasefire where we targeted the most violent offenders, oftentimes gang members and high-level drug trafficking organizations that employed violence. And what I quickly realized is that you could prosecute all day, all year, and you can fill the jails up, you can fill the prisons up, but we weren't affecting that fundamental decision that young men were making. It was primarily young men as to whether they were going to pick up a gun or whether they were going to stay in school. And that's what I eventually came down to, is we had to start affecting the mental calculus of young men 14, 15, 16 years of age, so that they started making a decision, and they had to know it was a life or death decision to either stay in school or to stay on the streets. If they stayed on the streets, the results were going to be inevitable. They were going to be predictable. It was going to be jail, prison, the grave, serious injury. That's the alternative was to stay in school, and we had to convince them that there was a benefit in staying in school. And that's how we actually started our process of putting some of our prosecutors out into the community to work with community-based organizations to help identify problems before they spun out of control. And eventually that's what led us to the most valuable institution in any community is your public school system. And how do you keep your young men, primarily your young men, in the school system? And what we quickly learned is in order to do that, you had to start creating substitute families for lots of these at-risk kids, and you had to give them mentors, you had to give them leadership, and it had to be more than just the time they spent in school. This had to be almost what we call wraparound or round-the-clock attention, where you focus on these young men, you create a family for them, and you show them positive examples of how to live their life and get through the most difficult phases in their life in a positive way.
How did you come acquainted with the violence-free zone in particular, and have you seen the results?
No question about it. I was brought in to contact with your organization through the Bradley Foundation, which is a fascinating example of the Bradley Foundation is a nonprofit entity that has been involved in civic development in Milwaukee for many, many years, and it had never been able to get directly into the public school system. And the foundation piloted the violence-free school zone in one of our more troubled schools on the south side of Milwaukee, and using your model, actually funded a pilot project that was so successful in its first year in reducing the number of acts of violence within that school and even in the adjacent neighborhood, that they were able to take that model and go to the Milwaukee Public School Systems Board of Advisors and get the school system as a whole to adopt and expand this program throughout a number of schools in the Milwaukee area. And that is absolutely unique, getting an entity that starts off as a private foundation experiment to be adopted in a public school system. And the results have been phenomenal. We've seen, I told you that my number one object has been to affect that decision on whether you pick up the gun and get involved in acts of violence in our streets. And what we can tell you is that since this program has been in place, there's clearly been other factors that have been very effective as well, but this is one of the key factors. We've seen the largest reductions in violent crime in Milwaukee's history in the last 25 years. And that's how deeply I feel that this isn't just a luxury, it's just not a good program. This is a necessity. This is something that we need to have in our community if we're going to continue creating a safe environment, a place where people know that their kids are going to be able to go to school in safety and raise their kids, go to their jobs, and continue the vitality and the economic prosperity that we're hoping for in the future.
And so what has been the response of your young prosecutors to this? Is there a buy-in and the police? What have you seen?
Totally different perception of what the role of the prosecutor is. In the past, it was essentially, hey, you guys catch them. We cook them and the courts will eat them. And now the perception is, wait a minute, we really can change the dynamic of what's taking place in the neighborhood. We can sort the wheat from the chaff. There's still plenty of bad actors out there that have to be identified and removed from the community. We all agree on that. What we're looking for are the larger number of young men that can be saved, and the young woman that can be saved from bad decisions that kids make all the time. And when we see that we do this, it changes your perspective and your perception of what your role is. You're not just a case processor. You're a person that can use your skills to affect change in a specific life or a specific neighborhood. And that then it becomes compounded, expanded. It starts reverberating through the whole community, and you start developing a trusting relationship with some parts of the community that have not had that relationship in the past. They've actually had a great deal of distrust, sometimes for good reason, with the law enforcement community in the past. And now they're starting to say, hey, wait a minute, these are people that are coming to us in good faith. They're here on the ground with us, and they're sharing the good times and the bad times with us, and they're making a difference. And that's an exciting thing for a prosecutor. It's if all you ever did was saw the bad every day and dealt with that, it can become depressing and frustrating. Here you get a chance to see some success stories.
Some years ago, when I first came to Milwaukee and met with the chief of police, I read in the paper that there were 65,000 police service calls to the 80-some schools in Milwaukee, 65,000 in 1 year. And what you're saying is that number is probably dramatically reduced and that there are fewer cases that have to be handled by the prosecutor. I would imagine that having such an impact will free the prosecutors to concentrate on some of the major drug offenses and other more serious crimes, as opposed to prosecuting, youthful offenders for some of the kind of violence that we've seen. How say you on that?
When I was first elected, I made a fundamental promise to my community, and I said I would do everything in my power to create a safer community, and I would do so while trying to put fewer people in jail and prison. The only way you can do that is to have an effective relationship with the community, that you can identify problems before they spin out of control. And it goes to exactly what you're talking about there. And that means if you prevent things from happening or if you intervene intelligently at the right time, you don't have to just reactively prosecute people. And so what you do with those resources then is you can shift them towards the individuals that are committing, for example, sexual offenses, that, that everyone agrees those are dangerous people that need to be removed from the community, or people that are just, determined to commit violent acts with guns and are going to rob people and shoot people. Those are individuals everyone agrees need to be removed from the community. And if you intervene in people's lives early enough where they don't make the decisions that get them to the point that all you can do is incarcerate them, then you're saving the system truly hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars that can be better used in other areas. I advocate for putting more money into the front end, where it means intervention, it means treatment if necessary, it means mentorship, it means that the one-on-one relationship with at-risk kids. That's where you're going to save the resources on the back end. That if you take the other approach, all you ever do is you just keep growing the back end of the system, and before too long, you can't sustain it anymore.
I know that from experience. Have more citizens been willing to testify when they at crime scenes? What impact has it at all had in that area?
Yeah, no question. One of the things that we were able to do is to address what's commonly referred to as sort of as the no snitching culture is just that, is again build up relationships with young people, take them serious, and try to nurture some relationships with them. And then come up with some proactive solutions to that distrust so that you get people coming forward when they need to come forward. It played a big role. I established my own witness protection unit in the DA's office itself because I felt strongly that we had to respond to the community and do it in an effective, proactive way. It wasn't the old model of wait until something bad happens and then try to remove all the parties. Instead, it's as soon as a bad problem happens, we want people to call us, let us know what's going on, and then sometimes it's as simple as, showing up at someone's front door and saying, hey, I hear you've got a beef with so-and-so. Let's make sure we handle this the right way. Let's make sure it's handled in the courts and not on the streets. Because there isn't any justice on the streets. That's in the end. There's just pain and suffering when you try to handle it yourselves. If you let the system work the way it's supposed to work, that's the only way we're going to be able to live as a society with each other.
I had the pleasure of cooperating with you. On a very unique kind of witness, an impromptu witness protection program few years ago. Can you you want to share with us what happened there?
Boy, let me give you an update on that one. You played a pivotal role. One of the first cases, a young man agreed to testify. His father was a county worker. He insisted that his son, who had been shot in a parking dispute, one of these senseless acts of violence, a young man, 17 years old, all of his life in front of him, is shot and seriously injured, but not fatally injured. We asked him to come in and testify. The people that did it tried to intimidate him not into coming, but his father insisted that he come. He does come, and the day after he testifies, he's gunned down in his backyard and killed. The entire family was in desperate need of some protection and some quick removal from the community. And you stepped forward with a gentleman by the name of Rick Riederholder from the Betty Brin Foundation, another fantastic foundation in our community. You folks stepped forward and gave us the resources we needed to help that family in that time of need. And what I'll tell you, since that time, our county has funded a witness protection program named after that young man. And we have helped now hundreds of people. And I think, again, this plays a big role in reducing the violent crime that's oftentimes retaliation violent crime and creates all these different circles within circles that keep spiraling downward unless you do something about it. So we are deeply grateful. In fact, I just met with the father this morning, and we've even, we're going to put a cap on that story because we're going to charge the person responsible for that homicide this week. And it wouldn't have been possible if we hadn't been able to help that family and create this witness protection program. So So you've got a strong legacy in our community. I know you came in as a consultant, but the model that you brought to Milwaukee is a model that's working, and it's one that we've now, I think like most communities, you have to adapt it to your community, and then you have to let it grow in the way it's going to grow in your community. But you've got a great model, and you were a great mentor for the violence-free school zone initiative here in Milwaukee, and again, we're grateful for that.
Well, thank you so much, and you may be pleased to know that one of the first cases, the young man whose pregnant girlfriend was shot down in front of him, and we had to remove his family. He is now successfully graduated from high school and is serving in the military.
Well, I am, and that's another great example of the kind of work that you've done. And again, you do that with a degree of credibility among the young men and women in your respective communities that I think is something that is incredibly valuable to the law enforcement services and to the other government agencies in those communities. You've got an ability to get to the heart of the matter that sometimes we have difficulty doing, and so I just deeply appreciate your friendship and your help.
Well, John, I just want to tell you how much you're a man of vision and willing to step outside of the box and seek non-coercive means to help children, and that has just inspired others in law enforcement, and we hope that we'll be sending people to Milwaukee to learn from you, and hopefully you'll be willing to travel as our ambassadors to other cities to share your story of success so that other cities can begin to adapt some of these policies and procedures that have the impact of reducing violence. That is really urban terrorism.
That's what it is, and you've got my commitment to do that. I love this job. I love my community. It's a privilege to serve it, and when you have the ability to identify problems and get the community to come up with the solutions and then back those solutions, that's when you see the success.
Thank you so much. We have been talking about youth violence in this segment with Milwaukee District Attorney John Chisholm. In a few moments, we will get to the police department's view from Richmond, Virginia's Assistant Chief of Police David M. McCoy. I'm Bob Woodson, president of the Center for Neighborhood Enterprise, and we will return after these messages.